Welcome back to the Everyone Gets a Trophy podcast. I'm joined by the inimitable Randy Boone. You ever say the word inimitable?
Randy? Did you say inedible?
Inimitable.
Oh, I thought you said inedible. Sorry. Yes, you're correct.
Are you inedible?
I'm pretty sure I am edible to certain species, but anyway.
I think to some humans, you're edible.
I'll leave that alone.
Inimitable means good or unusual and impossible to copy. Did you know that?
My wife would agree with that probably.
It's an SAT word. Yeah, your wife would agree with that in a negative sense probably.
Yes, no, that's where I was going with that. But
she views you more as something to endure than celebrate.
Survivor.
Well, that's actually a nice segue, Randy, because Texas fans once again started off awesome. It's the honeymoon, it's the wedding, stars in our eyes. And then the second half became year 11 in the marriage, where you look across over your Lean Cuisine TV dinner on the Barca Lounger and you say, is this all there is? What'd you think? What were your impressions of the horns? Let's narrow it down to one side of the ball. What'd you think about the defense?
I mean, set the tone early, played very aggressively. And then completely lost all aggression or ability to tackle in most of the second half, if not all of it. And I, once again, I'll go back to we cannot execute a quote-unquote passive call on defense because we just run to a spot and cover grass and don't do anything.
Yep. Yeah, so I write postmortems on Inside Texas for those of you who are not members, the few of you who are not members. And I kind of made exactly that point. And I felt good, actually, Randy, because I wrote some very specific things about what had changed from the first half to the second. And Sark, a couple of days later, echoed a lot of those thoughts. So it means I'm seeing the game similarly, or he's reading my postmortems. What do you think? You think he's actually plagiarizing me?
I would lean towards the latter of those, or the former of those two. That
you said latter.
I did first, and then I changed.
But your instinct was that he is copying me.
You're correct. He definitely woke up and was just refreshing Inside Texas all morning or afternoon or whenever you posted it, and just was come on.
A major college football coach was like, I don't know what happened, and then he read me, and he's like, yeah, I think that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I think he is aware. I mean, I think everybody's aware. I don't know if it's a comfort thing or they honestly think it's going to work. But I mean, I go back to Rod Baber's famous line of life's a constant struggle of who you want to be and what you need to be. And I don't know, maybe we figured it out that we just aren't very good at playing non-man aggressive, hey, make the quarterback throw it within a second and a half defense.
Yeah, so to that point, mildly technical for a moment. In the first half, we had huge success with six-man pressures.
Yes.
And those six-man pressures were exactly comprised of what I wanted to see, which is not bringing superfluous guys from the edge where the ball's already out before they even affect the play. But we were blitzing interior linebackers and setting up Tavondre Sweat and Byron Murphy with the one-on-one matchups, which led to also one-on-one matchups for Sorrell and Burke, who did a good job of containing, keeping Hoover from bouncing out of the pocket. And then Murphy and Sweat were just eating. And at the same time, while we're running the six-man pressure, we're in man behind it. Everyone knows who they got. They're not garden grass. And we're allowing shallow crossers. For once, we're allowing it. We want it to allow it because we want to show them an open receiver short of the sticks. So if he wants to throw it instantly, fear that pressure. There it is. We're going to tackle him short of the sticks and they're punting. If he wants to hold on to it, what happened to him?
Pressure's getting home.
Pressure got home and he got sacked.
We had some good games. There were some good games up front too.
Yeah, we had
coupled with the interior pressure or blitz, whatever you want
to
call it.
The other companion to the six-man pressures were when we went four-man pressures, we did something against type, which is we ran games, we ran TE stunts, tackle end stunts on first down, on second down, on non-typical traditional downs, hoping to catch them in a pass, right? TCU scouted us. They probably knew, at least early, they weren't going to have great success running the ball. And we caught them in those. Burke did a good job. Sweat did a good job. We were lining them up in three techniques. So the point is, our point is, there's a reason we held them to 6 points. And it wasn't just we have a good defense, but also we had a good game plan. And at that end of that half, when Hoover threw that INT, that was a backup freshman quarterback with eyes real big. And we had an opportunity to build on that. And we threw it all away with passive coverages. We called off the dogs. And in the second half, Hoover goes 14 of 20 for about 211 yards, two touchdowns, no picks.
Yeah, no, you're right. And I don't know if you, I mean, other than Savion Williams, I mean, I think you felt really, really good about every one of the matchups you had out there. And if you can make the quarterback throw it quickly, then you kind of take him out of the game a little bit. So, just, I mean, yeah, he's going to get his catches or whatever, but the ability of him to do major, major damage is limited. But the only thing about that I've seen or heard or read this week is, you know, Sark kind of made a comment about, you know, the way you let people back in the game is allow them to score quickly. And I'm just scared that instead of correctly identifying why they scored quickly, we double down on, hey, we just got to get better at playing a soft bend but not break thing. Cause I can't remember, somebody said it in the post game, and whoever it was, take the credit for it, but we are who we are at this point in the season. Like I can get as frustrated as I want watching the game about the potential that I see and how we don't quite live up to what I would think it should be. But we, at this point, it is what it is. You just got to execute the best game plan for what you got. And I think our best game plan is pressure, make him get the ball out of his hands early. And if you get burned that way, you get burned that way. But playing soft coverage and allowing somebody to go up and down the field on you is just brutal, brutal to watch. And I'm sure it's terrible to play.
At the risk of a trademark Wadlington clock rant, Sark, when he says things like that, drives me insane.
Yeah.
TCU can do a 9-play, 75-yard drive for a touchdown in 2 minutes and 20 seconds.
2 minutes, yep.
Like,
coaches, we do it all the time. I don't understand.
We do it all the time.
I don't understand. Like, we're not the only people that can do it.
The way you stop an offense, the clock is not your friend. At the end of the half, at the end of the game, the ball and stopping their offense is how you get their offense's ass off the field. I don't know if you caught any of the Kansas-Texas Tech game.
Oof.
Texas Tech gets sort of outplayed by Kansas with their true freshman walk-on quarterback, right? They get the ball at the end of the game. There's, I think, 26 seconds on the clock, and they have either zero timeouts or a timeout.
Yeah, it was something around that. I can't remember exactly, but yeah.
Kansas plays this passive off weird prevent as if, and by the way, a field goal would have tied it. Is that correct? Or no, field goal wins it.
I don't recall. Yeah, I was at a. Okay.
So a field goal wins it.
It was tied. Right. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, a field goal wins it. So you're not even protecting the end zone. You're having to protect the field goal line to gain. This guy rolls out passive coverage. And Kansas had been smoking Tech's passing game all game. And mostly with man coverage, Mello Dotson and Kobe Bryant. Tech hits three throws, kicks the field goal. They win the game. I mean, I don't understand.
What's the over? Disconnect. What's the over?
I don't understand it.
I mean, I know, like, at this point, you've got to have seen it enough as a defensive coordinator. I mean, is it just something that allows them to sleep at night or not sleep at night? I don't get it. I can't. It's hard to fathom. Like, it's easier for them to stomach that than, oh, man, they made an unbelievably great catch on one-on-one coverage, and that beat us. Like, the fact that we made the quarterback make a throw, I don't know.
Weirdest thing in the world is that
I'm sure football purists are yelling at us, but I don't get it.
Yeah, they're wrong. you, I don't want to extrapolate from backyard dad here, but you know, if I'm just standing in my backyard playing catch with someone throwing the football, I could drop some pretty good dimes, man. If you make me run and someone's running at me, just going, ah, I can't hit anything.
Yep.
So move that up a few levels, admittedly, in football.
Yeah, I understand. And, I mean, yeah, you're allowing them to play 7-on-7, which is what all these quarterbacks grew up in. It's taking them right back to their comfort zone.
That's exactly right. And so I'm not saying go Todd Orlando zero blitz, because I know that's what people are going, oh, you don't want to do that.
No.
Don't. Just like, can you rush 4 or 5?
Player defense.
Yeah, it's play your D. Play the thing that has kept them under 13 points the entire game.
Sort of like what allows us to score in the red zone.
By the way,
just run your offense.
Speaking
of your defense,
when the clock is your ally, when the other team doesn't have a timeout, because if you can get the quarterback on the ground, they're done.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Their possession is over, because the time it takes for them to get up, to rally, to run up, spike the ball down.
Receivers got to come back from 40 yards.
Receivers have to come back from all that stuff. You guys have all seen that in a game. The game's over. But I always laugh when a team has a minute on the clock, no timeouts, and you're playing a three-man rush, and you're like, hey, man, you know, if you get to this guy, the game's over. Like, it's done. But I don't know, man. Sorry for the little side tangent there.
I'm with you.
I'm with you on the defense. I was not disappointed in the effort level or anything like that. I was disappointed in how we coached in the second half, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, it just gets back to the – I just don't think we're very good. I mean, earlier in the season, maybe you questioned what you thought about effort level or whatever, but I think at this point it's just – they're just not very good at it for whatever reason, and they seem to be pretty adept at the style that we played for most of the game. So I would just prefer to see more of that.
Yeah, and also what that style does, Randy, is it prevents bystanders.
And yes.
The worst thing you can have on defense is guys who aren't in the rush but not in coverage.
Did you what was it? It was the touchdown pass where Ford and Taff sandwiched the guy.
Yep.
And Ford almost got there and Taff almost got there, but they were both just a little bit late.
Yep.
I can't remember who the linebacker was. It may have been Blackwell, but they wrongly highlighted him pre-snap as the linebacker that almost made the play. And if you watch that play, he just sort of floats off into oblivion to a single receiver side where, I mean, he's not going to help the corner. He's not helping on anybody else because there is nobody else.
And he's not part of the pass rush.
He's just there standing 20 yards from the quarterback and 10 yards from where the ball was completed. And I'm sure that's the zone he was assigned to. And yeah, it would probably take a little bit more experience for him to look around and be like,
go find work.
Can't get to the corner. Let me just keep getting depth, you know, and maybe he undercuts that thing. But it's just, that's the type of stuff that I think you're talking about where you have a very athletic defender that could be useful in a way other than backpedaling 10 yards and then side shuffling another 5 to guard the hash mark.
The beauty of a 6-man pressure is 6 men are rushing and 5 men are covering, and no one is in Mr. In-between land. No one's a bystander. Literally, our secondary is pointing to the guy they got.
Yep.
And our rushers are like fired up because they know in a 6-man pressure, they got a real shot at a sack, particularly our inside guys, right?
Absolutely. And I think, you know, people point to, well, you know, some of our secondary guys have gotten burned in man coverage. 25 yards down the field they have.
Yeah.
But if you ask them to cover 10 to 15 with leverage, assuming that the quarterback has to get rid of the ball, I like pretty much everybody that we trot out there. I mean, really anybody. I mean, if you take any of our defensive backs and say, hey, you got that guy and you got to cover him for 3 seconds. There's not too many that I don't trust to do that.
So think of how Texas dominated TCU offensively for the first 2.9 quarters.
Mm-hmm.
The last 4 possessions that TCU had
weren't good.
they had 249 available yards. Like where they got the ball, if you count that line all the way to the goal line, add that yardage four times, four possessions, it's 249 yards. They gained 247 of them.
I was going to say they couldn't have been far off the 249 because they scored
three touchdowns, and then we stopped them on goal to go on the two. So,
ooh, that's not good.
That's so. I mean, that's not like, ooh, we struggled a little, or they hit a play. I mean, I don't care. It's football.
Yeah,
we folded. We fell apart. And if the game had gone 65 minutes, I think we lose.
I don't even think it needed to go 65 minutes. I think if
62.
I think if it stays in regulation and Mitchell doesn't make the catch on the, I'm going to call it a back shoulder fade out of optimism.
Hey man, he's hurt.
Or the Tordal wore off.
That's right. I think the Tordal wore off.
And he's gutting it out, doing the best he could. But hey, you put it in a good spot.
Yeah,
you know, knowing, I mean, anyway, but I mean, great catch by Mitchell. But I mean, if he doesn't make that catch, I don't feel real good about what happens after that.
All right. Well, before we talk about the offense, I want to talk about a guy who never has a lapse in the fourth quarter. His name is David McClellan. He is a partner at Forum Financial. He's a fiduciary financial analyst, not analyst, advisor. And David has deep and extensive background in finance, working for some pretty elite companies. And of course, now he is bringing that acumen and years of experience as a certified financial planner and advisor to help you grow your wealth. So if you got some wealth now, awesome. Talk to David, see if you can get it optimized and put in the right barrels and buckets for your retirement. And if you're someone who's building wealth, this is the time to talk to someone because you can get a huge advantage over everyone else, having the right financial acumen and the right advisor. Give David a call. Find out why he is well worth the time, and the cost is free. He's just going to set up a consultation with you, figure out what's going on in your financial life, and see if you guys can work together. If at the very least, you're going to get some really great financial advice, at the very most, you might have a new financial advisor who's going to change your money world. Give him a call, 312-933-8823. That's David McClellan at 312-933-8823. And then, if you want to narrow your financial world to the mortgage world, Randy's looking at his watch. He's got better things to do than hear my promos.
I'm thinking of something. Go ahead.
You could give our friend Gabe Winslow a call. He's been a great sponsor of this podcast from the very beginning. He sponsors numerous Longhorn stuff all over the internet. He's a phenomenal fan, phenomenal supporter. Giving a little of that NIL cheese too, Randy. Gabe's a great guy.
I heard he's got some input in a hire that's coming up. But
yeah, yeah, absolutely. Gabe's a big shot. You guys pick up the phone and find out why. You can reach him at 832-557-1095. Beyond the fact that he's a great Longhorn fan, hey, that's great. One of the things that makes me a Longhorn and makes Randy a Longhorn is critical thinking skills. If a Longhorn and an Aggie are competing for a job and the Aggie's better qualified, we're probably going to hire the Aggie. An Aggie would hire the Aggie
if he's right on that
over the Longhorn. Here's the deal. Gabe is a great Longhorn, and he's incredibly qualified, and he's great at what he does. Seriously, really sharp guy. Over 20 years in the industry, law degree, and just sharp as hell. Seriously, pick up the phone, talk to him. You'll understand within like the first 90 seconds of talking to him why he's not your typical mortgage guy. 832-557-1095. And last, but certainly not least, if you're in the greater Centex area looking to buy a home or sell a home, you can reach Laura Baker, Realtor Extraordinaire, an award-winning member of the Keller Williams family at, you don't know her number, do you?
No.
512-784-0505. Laura is really good at what she does. And Realtor, man, there's a lot of jobs where you want to go with experience and someone who knows what they're doing. Realtor has the widest range of ability. This is my opinion, not Laura's. Let's just say that there's some part-time realtors who sell a house or two every year, and it's Pam who lives down the street, or it's the sister of the cousin that you'd hurt her feelings if you didn't list the house with her. In every one of those circumstances, without exception, you will be screwed in a major way.
If, yeah, I get I got a couple of good realtor stories from a couple experiences. So yeah, I won't divulge it on air for fear of retribution. But if any of y'all ever run across me and want to buy me a beer, I'll gladly inform y'all on those. And it's you want a good one. Let's put it that way.
You want your T's crossed and your I's dotted, and that's Laura Baker. You'll find out very quickly why she is an award-winning member and she's a top producer. You don't do deals in real estate world with people who don't do deals. It doesn't go well. Reach out to her, find out why. 512-784-0505. All right. All my shameless promos and plugs have been done. And if you need to build a junior high, call Randy Boone.
Sure. No, the reason I was laughing a while ago was you looked down to read Gabe's number and I was like, whoa. Are we second guessing ourselves, or are you just making sure?
I was actually reading a text message. I was multitasking.
Oh, okay, there you go. Well, yeah.
What do you think about that?
Impressive. That's why. I mean, plugs, reading text at the same time. I was just checking what time it was, even though it's on my computer.
I do the same thing. Do you still wear a watch?
I do. I don't know why. It was basically because I don't want to get my phone in my pocket.
Yeah, I stopped wearing a watch, I think, 10 years ago.
Or for the health, like tracking heart rate and workout tracking is really about the only way.
I thought you meant the 3 ounces of the watch for giving you a little workout.
Yeah, it's my left rotator cuff is a lot better than it used to be.
If only you pitched with your left.
Oh, that's a whole other story.
All right, man. Let's talk Texas offense. So I do want to talk about one thing. I want to see if you agree with me. I speak message board fan. I've been writing about Texas for Texas fans for 25 years, probably, right? Some of it for fun, some of it actually seriously, right? When Texas offense fails, it's because we're passive. When Texas offense succeeds, it's because we're aggressive. And it doesn't actually matter what the play call was. If we run an off-tackle dive and it goes for 37 yards, that's an aggressive, brilliant play call.
You're right.
If we throw three consecutive Hail Marys, they're going to be like, when is this offense going to get out of its shell, right? So throwing that nomenclature out, I didn't think Texas got passive in the second half. I don't think that's the reason we failed. I thought it was purely executional and intensity. But I thought the players let up, to be honest.
I would agree until probably after the we're going to run the ball.
That drive. Well, that drive. Was the third drive. Yes.
I would say the first two drives, I really didn't have a problem with anything. Just, yeah, like you said, just didn't execute very well. You know, the receivers kind of let up on a couple. I mean, I think Mitchell even mentioned it in the post game that. Yeah, where he's like, hey, I kind of let one fly earlier in the game, so I had to make up for it. But after the, hey, we crammed it down your throat, and it's third and three, and
nine in the box.
I don't even know. Do they have somebody lined up over the receiver? I'm not real sure they did. you want to talk about selling out to stop the run. And I don't, like I said, I don't know what Quinn's shoulder was, but I mean, if he wasn't able to throw a simple glance route or whatever it would have taken to do that, then he didn't be in the game. But that was kind of the point for me where I was like, come on now.
Yeah.
And then I don't know that it really got much better after that. I don't know what Brooks's situation had to do with that and how the timing of all that played out. But at the same time, you're there and you got those guys, and that's the guys you got to play the game with. I mean, you let Malik Murphy throw it all over the place last week. You got to play the game, man. You got to play the game. Because
I agree. So
that was not playing the game. That was trying to get out of there at that point, I think. And maybe the execution on the first two drives had something to do with it. Maybe you didn't trust the execution anymore.
Possibly. So that's what I'll amend my statement. I thought the first two drives, we came out perfectly fine in terms of aggression of play calling, setting the tone, right? I thought the players' lack of execution and intensity screwed that up. The third drive was Sark pissed off trying to make a point to his team. And he ran the ball 8 consecutive times for 42 yards. Then we got a 3rd and 3 on the TCU 31-yard line. TCU is literally 9 in the box. There's no deception anymore. And we hand the ball right up the middle. It gets stuffed. And so right there, a little glance route to Jatavion Sanders. I think it goes for a touchdown, right? But Sark said in the presser, the post game, I was trying to prove a point, and he was mad. Like, you could tell Sark was pissed off. And I didn't care if it was a field goal. We were going to run the ball until they stopped us. And so I think he had a little play caller's peak, like a little play caller tantrum right there. And I think that was a result of the prior 2 possessions, if that makes sense.
I think you're 100% right. I don't know that he ever really got unpissed. Did you watch the beginning of the presser?
Yeah, he was pissed off. Being pissed off carried over from the post game in Fort Worth all the way to his presser this morning. I think he reviewed the game and he said all the right things. We're happy for a win. Oh, blah blah.
Always
blah,
does. He always does. Yeah.
He was clearly pissed off because he felt. I don't think he thought TCU was very good after playing them, and I also think he felt. I thought we addressed some of this stuff was kind of his undertone, and we apparently did not address some of this stuff. So yeah, I'm glad. I'm glad he's fired up.
Yeah,
about
100%. Yeah, I mean it's got to be a terrible thought. I mean, I don't know if he's correct, uncorrect, whatever, incorrect or whatever, but yeah, it's got to be a bad thought as a coach. But like, I thought we fixed this.
Yeah, now I know how all my high school coaches felt coaching me.
I told you this last week.
Yeah.
I agree with you. I don't think it was just a complete, hey, we're going to try and get the hell out of here game plan coming out of halftime. I mean, it was, like you said, 2 series of failed execution, the 3rd series of whatever. And then after that, it got a little for me, but.
Yeah, you're right.
I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, look, got the win, 9-1. Before we talk about Iowa State and some of the implications, because here's what's wild, Randy, little teaser. If Texas loses to Iowa State, there's a high probability we don't play in the Big 12 title game.
Yep.
So as we mull that over, we're going to talk about that at the end of the pod. I want a brief interlude, an intermission, an intermezzo, if you will, because I want to talk about something pretty hilarious. That's the Aggie football coaching search. As everyone knows by now, Jimbo Fisher was let go 6 years into his reign at A&M. No conference titles to show for it. No national championships got filled in on that plaque, Randy. Didn't even win the division. And signed the highest rated recruiting class in the history of recruiting classes. The best recruiting class that money could buy, according to Nick Saban. With no real results. Jimbo Fisher gets fired and they have to pay a $75 million buyout, which is staggering. Who are they going to hire? Because it doesn't appear they had who they're going to hire lined up, right? They're going to go do a full search and see who they can turn up.
My thoughts are, I think they have somebody that they're comfortable with, that they feel pretty confident that they can get, and they're seeing if they can better that.
Okay,
over
so
the next few weeks.
What is their baseline? Because I have some friends, we're texting about it, and I said, look, we're going to journey there and back again and talk about all these people.
Oh, it's going to be fascinating for the next couple of weeks. It's going to be fun.
And I was like,
listen to all this. Yeah.
At the end of the road, we'll begin at the beginning of the road, which was Traylor and Elko.
I think Elko is the break glass in case of emergency floor setter.
Okay, interesting. I think I agree with you. Who are the assets?
I would not hand the keys. We've talked about it on this podcast. I would not hand the keys of that to Traylor if I were them. There's just too much uncertainty.
Really? I think his upside could be scary, potentially.
Oh, I don't want them to. Let's put it that way. Because if it does hit, I think his upside would be. But
national title.
If I was Bjork or whoever is going to end up ultimately signing off on this thing, that would be a tough It's tough, dude. SEC and Texas A&M is not UTSA, and it's damn sure not Texas high school football. So I think the guy can be very successful.
Whoa. Are you coming down on East Texas football, high school football?
It's not the SEC.
First of all, dude, you played in the Golden Crescent. No one even knows
what
that is.
I still don't even know what the Golden Crescent is.
I played in Austin, and I didn't play for Lake Travis or Westlake. So
no, I mean, I don't want to see him on that sideline with that uniform on, but it would be tough for me if I was in that if I was in a decision making position over there. That would be that's a big jump, man.
It is. You're right.
It's a big jump. I think Elko's the floor setter for him.
Who are the aspirational hires?
I mean, anybody. I mean, you got the Chip Kellys of the world. You got Dabo Swinney. You got
they will not Lanning. Hire Chip Kelly.
No, I don't think so either. I mean, I'm just saying that I guarantee you their phones rang 4 times and somebody said, "Hey, my guy's interested," and they're like, "Whoa, wasn't aware of that."
That's just Jimmy Sexton trying to get guys raises.
I didn't say it was true or not. I'm just telling you that I promise you there's a lot of people out looking for raises. Hell, I got a freaking Photoshop thing earlier of Cliff Kingsbury on the sideline in A&M gear, and I was like, "Dude, you're not even employed, and you're looking for a raise."
He's in Thailand.
So nice on the USC sidelines where he's at.
Yeah, but he flies to Thailand Monday
during the week.
Yeah,
but no, that's kind of some people at work have talked about it. But I think that's sort of the Elko's done great things at Duke. I mean, I don't know, but
interesting.
It'll be. I said it's just. It'll be interesting to see how it all plays out because. I'm sure they'll take a couple swings. They'll call a couple people that I think everybody knows will say no, but I think every coaching search calls 3 or 4 people that they know will say no, just check the box. So
they will have to call Dan Campbell.
Yes, absolutely.
And he will say, "I'm very flattered, but I coach a Super Bowl contender and I'm in the NFL."
Yeah, he's where he's at.
All right. I want to share something that it kind of amused me because I hadn't been thinking about it for a while. Every now and then I do like open up the programs, do the rankings. Joel Klatt, who I like, I think he does a great job.
I do too.
Mm-hmm. And he was talking on his show very calmly and just very, not trying to be like flame bait guy, but he was like, A&M is the 7th best job at best in the SEC. And as I heard it at first, it hit my ear and I was like, no. And then I thought about it and I was like, yeah. Yeah, he's right. He's including Texas and OU.
Yeah, right. I was going to say, if you throw Texas and OU in there, he's probably not far off.
So I'm going to name off some programs. And if A&M, no. I want us to both, and let's be clear for the listeners, we're evaluating the job as it is today.
Right.
100%. We're not, I don't care if your team won a national championship in 1953, right? A&M has proven incredible resources, incredible devotion, and they are maniacally devoted to bringing a national championship to College Station. Mm-hmm. Now, they haven't executed very well on that, but that doesn't mean that it's not a coveted job by most coaches in college football. It is. However, I'm going to name a program, and if you think A&M is a better job, you speak up.
Okay.
SEC. Bama.
Do I have to say anything, or do I just wait?
Well, you can – I mean, it's better. It's better podcast if you give some sort of make a fart noise or something.
No. Yeah. Bama's Bama. LSU. Yeah, I would.
Mm-hmm. Texas.
Mm-hmm.
OU.
Currently, yes.
Okay. Georgia.
Yes.
Snicker. Florida. Oh, they're down. They're down.
Too much talent in that state with not
absolutely.
That much.
Absolutely. Florida's
with not that much competition. I mean, you got I know people go everywhere now, but it's no.
Florida's an amazing job. So those are 6 schools right there. Now, not only here's the thing, if you want to irritate your Aggie friends, not only may A&M be the seventh best job, it could be the ninth or the eighth, depending on how you rank the next three, because they're all very similar and you can argue each one of them. And I'm talking about Auburn, Tennessee, and A&M. I'm not talking about Ole Miss. I've heard people say that. No, A&M's a better job than Ole Miss.
Mm-hmm.
Fair? Do you agree with that?
Yes. No, you're right.
So Auburn and Tennessee.
I think the argument, but I think you're correct on the argument there. I think that becomes very debatable and cyclical as to how talent is moving around, how the boosters are funding things, and success on the field will drive those programs into differing heights throughout their.
So here's the thing about Auburn and Tennessee that's attractive. They have done it.
Yeah,
they have won national titles. Mm-hmm. They've played at the highest level. Tennessee lacks a natural recruiting base.
Yes.
And that's always going to scare a head coach, even though they are fervent. They put 100,000 in Neyland. Their boosters are crazy. They own that state. Not the state you'd prefer to own if you're picking SEC states to own. I'd rather own Georgia. I don't know about you.
Yep.
Auburn, they're the most like the Aggies in that they're maniacal. They're insane. Their boosters will spend any amount of money to win a game. They have crazy scandals and they shake them off and don't give a damn. But they also have the sense of little brother in their own state. And Alabama ain't Texas. I mean, the state of Alabama ain't Texas, right?
No, yeah, you're not. Yeah, you're the talent base that you're fighting over there that you're losing most of your in-state stuff for is nowhere near the Texas or even Florida or Georgia.
That said, the highs that Auburn can achieve.
I was going to say, Auburn's
pretty high.
Auburn's been, it's kind of a roller coaster. But
their lows are below Mississippi State.
I was going to say, it's a roller coaster, but it's like a severe, it's an amusement park ride, not a nice little jaunt through a state fair.
You know, there's a lot of Penn State fans that might trade the roller coaster for the certainty of 9-3 and losing to Michigan and Ohio State, right?
I think so. I mean, Texas sort of went through a period.
There's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
All right. I know people throw in.
Yeah, that's crazy to think about, right? Like yeah. Penn State. Now, we win 9 or 10 games every year, but this is sort of getting, you know, they fired Yurcich, obviously, which whatever. He's going to be looking for a sixth different play caller or seventh?
Sixth or seventh, yeah. And since what, 2017?
Way too soon for it to
When did he take over?
I don't know. I can't remember.
15? I don't know.
That's a lot.
Yeah, it's wild. That's a lot. And they're not all going to the NFL.
It's not like they've all just been, walking out the door with a raise.
So I have an Aggie buddy who's a normal, somewhat sane Aggie buddy. But when there's crisis, Aggies act more Aggie-ish. I'm not sure if you've been exposed to this.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Do you agree with that? So I was just saying, there's plenty of normal Aggies that you can sit and BS with and they're perfectly rational. However, in brief times of crisis, even normal
I see what you're saying. Yeah.
They become very Aggie-ish. So I've got a buddy.
They're all invested right now, for sure.
Yeah. So I've got a buddy I was texting with, and I said, Joel Klatt says you're around the seventh best program in the SEC. He's right. Or the seventh best job.
That's what you led with?
Yeah. And he
can't imagine why he would have came back with anything.
I know. Well, he wrote back, LOL, that's a joke. Joel Klatt's a joke. And then he said something about Texas ruined his brain, his concussion, ruined his brain or something.
He's not wrong on that one.
And then I said, but no, seriously, it's true. I was like, do you think you're a top five program in the SEC? And he wrote, top five, period. And I wrote, top five, you're on your period, and that's why you've lost your mind and you're cranky. He meant top five national.
That's a little aggressive there.
So my point is, this is a rational, smart guy who can sit and talk about the weaknesses of A&M, and he'll laugh about Aggie stuff, and he thinks yell leaders are goofballs, and he thought so when he was in school. But in times of crisis, Aggies circle the wagons. And that, Randy Boone, is their strength, and that is their weakness. Because Texas fans like circular firing squads.
Yes.
When things go awry.
Yes. Yeah. No, we, that comment coming back in the same time scale of a Texas fan would have been like, no, we don't even belong. Like, you know, it's like,
well, so like, the funniest thing is if someone said to me, look, Texas is the fifth best job in the SEC, or Texas is the first best job in the SEC, I'd probably argue against both of them.
Yeah.
I'd say, I don't know if we're the best job in the SEC, because we seem to have this weird friction of, like, we can't fully commit to just being Ohio State.
Yeah, right? We can't get our own way. Yep.
Yeah, and then fifth best? Eh, probably not, because everyone knows what Texas can be. You know, you ask major college football coaches, and they'll say, yeah, that's a job I would want, and here's what I would do, right? So, and my point is, I wouldn't be offended at any.
Yeah, either one.
Mm-hmm. If someone said, oh, you know, Auburn and Arkansas are better jobs, I'd be like, okay, shut up, dummy. But, yeah, I just think it is funny. The circle the wagons aspect of the A&M mentality is awesome. And it really is a strength, and it really is a weakness. Mm-hmm. And it's a strength when you want to go pay a class and have the best signing class in the history of football. That's pretty awesome. You tell all the Aggies, line up, march over there, and open your wallets, and they go, yes, sir. But when you have times of crisis, they do not respond well.
Yeah.
But. So why are they letting the same dudes who picked Jimbo Fisher make this selection?
I don't know that they are.
I think they might be. Because, like, isn't the school going to pay for this?
So my understanding is that the foundation is probably, I don't think they pass the hat directly.
All right. Because if they dip into the permanent fund, the state legislature might have some issues with it.
Well, I think that's where the foundation, the 12th man thing comes in, because I think that's it's different how they run that over there with that a little bit. It's sort of affiliated, but it's not.
Interesting.
So I don't know.
It's like Harbaugh's sign stealer.
I think they can keep it. If that's the way they do it, they keep the circle pretty small. Unless you run across somebody who has a big buyout, and then they have to actually go past the hat, and then you get everybody's opinions involved.
So Dan Lanning has a huge buyout. Doesn't
20 million. 20 million.
Okay, well, that's not 75. That's nothing.
Right. But you I don't think they're going to be able to say, hey, we dropped 75 out of X fund, and now we're just going to toss another 20 on top. By the way, we also have to throw 30 on top of the 75
assistant
to buy out our coaches and everybody else, unless you're going to retain them all, which you're not. So.
And didn't they just give them all new contracts?
I think they just all – man, I don't know. That somebody was running the numbers on it the other day, and I feel like the actual number was closer to 100 than it was to 85.
Dang.
But I think that's where it could get crazy, like a little opinionated. I think they can keep the circle small. Did you watch I watched the Bjork press conference, just because I was interested to see more his demeanor than anything. He looked like somebody that was pissed off that he had to do that in the first place, and he was not real shy about dropping hints that he was not very happy about having to do it in the first place. So, I mean, you know, he's not his guy. He didn't bring him in.
Yeah.
And it's really not. If you look at the other hires he's made, it's been I didn't know that guy would even leave. Which Fisher sort of fits that mold, but much more of a Woodward hire than a Bjork hire. So I don't know. I'll be interested to see. I don't see him as we're going to go get the up and comer either after hiring Schlossnagel and Buzz Williams. I think he's going to try and find somebody that he trusts and believes in that's very organized, because his press conference came and Schlossnagel was very much that way. And I don't know anything about Buzz Williams, but it would surprise me if he's not that way. They're very, and if you watch Jimbo on the sidelines with this 9,000 page three ring binder, flipping pages maniacally, he didn't really give off the super
button down
and organized vibes.
So that's interesting, because one beautiful thing about these times of turmoil is you are able to get opinions from journalists that aren't secondhand and thirdhand, that they're passing on as their own, that they got from a coach or a source. And so you see these nationally prominent journalists making lists of who they'd hire or Texas A&M should look at. And then you're reminded how dumb some of these people are.
I listened to probably two or three quick podcasts a day. And like, if they listed seven names, like between the three of them, I don't know if there was the same name was on three of the list, and it barely was on two of the list. And half of the list, you're like, you've watched Major League, I'm sure, right?
Sure.
Movie. This guy here is dead. Cross him off then. Like, that's what I felt like listening to. It's like, no.
I mean, I'm hearing, like, there's a guy, a national prominent writer, who is bringing up the Georgia DC.
Is it Muschamp, right?
Kirby Smart's DC. No, Muschamp's like the DB coach.
He's co-DC.
Whatever. The point is, he's the young...
Kirby Smart's the DC.
Yeah, but he's the young up-and-comer that Kirby Smart is grooming.
Grooming, yeah.
You're going to hand over Texas A&M to that guy? No. I mean, how
could I don't know. What's his name? His name's like Schumann or Schumann. Yeah, I saw that. Yeah. I saw that one, yeah.
Like,
don't see that one.
Dude, Mississippi State shouldn't do that.
Yeah.
Much less Texas A&M. Oh man, it's crazy. So yeah, if you're
all coaching searches come with their own silliness, but I just feel like this one is a little more magnified because A, it's right down the road and we care more about it. Just, you know, obviously it affects us, but it's a pretty, it's a unique one just because of the buyout and everything, where everybody and people that don't know anything about college football are like, they did what?
Yeah.
So
the other thing that's great is Las Vegas loves to take advantage of the hoople heads during times of uncertainty. So there's an instant Vegas odds hit on who will be the next A&M coaching hire. And on the list, far down the list, but bettable, was Bill Belichick. So like, Vegas will collect a few thousand dollars from people who are like, if it hits, bro, I'm going to be rich. Belichick could take that job. He could win a title there.
I'd pay money to watch.
Patriots aren't playing well, bro.
I'd pay good money to watch Bill Belichick do a Texas A&M press conference.
I would pay even more money to see him at a midnight yell. Lucci and
Zwernan.
I want to see Bill Belichick at a midnight yell.
Oh, man.
Hi, I'm Cody.
That'd be great.
We're about to play the Mississippi State Bowl. Like, whoop.
Boy, I tell you what.
Smooth brain, yellow bellied, whoop. What's that next? They do all their motions.
Anybody that puts money on that, yeah, you nailed it. It's like, if it hits, yeah, okay, sure.
Have you ever been to a midnight yell?
No.
Oh.
No.
Would you go for just anthropological reasons?
No.
I feel like you've swayed before at an A&M game.
I got caught once. Yep. First one I ever went to. Yep. I was like, what's going on? Oh, whoop, got stuck.
Man.
They let me politely sit down now if I'm there. And they're like, no. This is that time that you sit. Okay, gotcha. Thank you.
You just go, I played for UT. I'm not participating
in this. Everybody I haven't been in a couple of years, but the group that sits around them, they know the drill now. They're like, hey, it's coming up.
Yeah, we don't ask Kevin Murray to throw his horns up if he goes.
Right. Yeah, it's like, no, not now.
That's hilarious.
No, I did get caught. I think it was a fave. Yeah, first one, I was just kind of like, oh, no. It's the sweet old lady next to you and my wife. I'm like, whatever.
That's awesome. but also sad.
Yeah, well, what happened? But yeah, no, it's funny. It was really funny. The like I said, that group around them.
Like, they tell you, like, Randy,
I want to say the guy, but I want to say the guy behind me tapped me on the shoulder like the first time. It's like, hey, thanks.
That's awesome, man. That's awesome. So, those are good ags. That's good bull, Randy.
Yeah, but no, it's gonna, like I said, it I mean, it, you want to talk about good radio podcasts and news for however long it takes. I mean, so let me get your take on this. How quick did they need to make this hire?
Well, the smart thing about, so let me praise what the Aggies have done right, because they haven't done anything, they haven't done much right, but this is what they did do right. Always do now what you're going to have to do eventually.
Yep.
And they fired him early to get a jump on all the other firings that are going to be coming and all the dislocation and coaches moving around, not just in college football, but potentially to the NFL, right? Mm-hmm. So they did it early. That was smart. It's giving them, they're the premier job that's open, and it's giving them the pick of the landscape of folks who are looking to make a move or whatever. So that's smart. I think that does also give them some time. So I think they have till Thanksgiving.
Oh, that quick. Okay.
December 1st.
Oh, December 1st. Yeah. December 1st is the date I had in my mind just because of, you know, signing day and all that stuff.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I would think you want to head.
I agree. I mean, the sooner the better.
Don't you want to head off the transfer portal too?
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, because that's the aspect that.
Like, the problem is just you get into, you know, do you have a guy that can come in right away? Is he coaching, you know, potentially in the postseason? Somebody did make a point the other day about how it's almost impossible to hire an NFL coach now unless you get the Nick Saban treatment where he just throws deuces up and comes back, and then you just know you're never going to coach in the NFL ever again.
Yeah.
But I mean, Josh McDaniel is
available.
He is available. Just can't say anything bad about the Patriots.
Don't say anything bad about the Patriots around him. He'll go off even though he's coaching another team. Yeah, so I think they did the timing.
I agree. Tomorrow would be better, I would imagine. But yeah, I think by late November for sure.
So let me ask you this. I mean, talk about a conversation you're not going to have in just 3 years ago. How many of the A&M bags have already been delivered and these guys are sort of free to go? Or how many of them are contingent and they have them on payments based on how many years they're at A&M?
Yeah, it depends on how their NIL stuff's structured, right?
So simply the structure of their NIL could be determinant of whether guys stay or leave.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. That's interesting. And also, I wonder how much of their money.
You would think that after making that deal and not having any offset whatsoever, they would have realized that was probably a terrible idea and maybe we should have some stipulations to our stuff. But
hey, explain what they
went. They may have went balls to the wall for the NIL class just like this and said, screw it, we're going for it. Who cares?
I mean, that's the ultimate Aggie thing to do, right? You give Eric Dickerson the Trans Am and he drives it to SMU.
Doesn't even come, yeah.
To explain what the offset is really quick.
Yeah, so basically Jimbo, you know, whatever the offset is, you know, if Jimbo goes and coaches at West Virginia, which is something you've heard, you know, and they pay him $4 million a year, then that $7.8 million that they owe him every year goes down to 3 point whatever.
No offset. Meaning, no offset if Jimbo whatsoever. Goes to West Virginia and he's paid four, he'll still make $7.5 million a year from A&M.
And the four,
and he'll be the highest paid coach still in college football.
Yeah.
Is Saban at 11? Something like that? 12?
I don't know where he's at.
I know. All I know is that dude's buying up car dealerships in Florida, and
he's got his own hotel apparently with a rooftop bar there in Tuscaloosa.
Bought a $20 million beach house.
I don't know who goes to it, but
sits there. You think he Airbnbs it to random?
Yeah, I'm sure it's on there.
Alabama fraternities.
Venmo me it. I can't think what his Venmo name would probably be. Probably be Nick Saban.
Nick Saban, all caps.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Hey, do you have any thoughts? It looks like Arkansas will fire Sam Pittman. Obviously, Mississippi State fired their guy. I think in no small part because A&M fired their guy. I think Mississippi State said, hey, there's going to be effects from the Aggie hire and fire. So let's get in on this too.
When's the last time that a team that beat somebody 50-something to 10 resulted in both head coaches getting fired?
And Boise
There's
State.
No way that's never happened, right?
No, it's never happened. And Boise State fired their head coach after blowing out New Mexico. So
really? I did not know that. I've been under a rock, I guess.
Yep. So, yeah, pretty wild. So who do you think Arkansas and Mississippi State will get? You think Traylor's in that conversation as well?
Yes, he's in the conversation, but if I were him, I would not take either.
Yeah, interesting. Life-changing money.
Life-changing money. It depends on what your goals are. I think he's got his sights set a little higher, possibly, potentially, at some point.
For sure.
Arkansas is a tough job. Especially with Texas and Oklahoma going. Oof.
You know how tough a job it is, Randy? I was thinking about it. And I was like, if I'm Gus Malzahn, I'm not sure I go to Arkansas. I think I'd stay at UCF.
Once again, it comes down to personal preference and what your goals are. But if you want to talk about the ability to win.
Win, yeah.
Yeah.
Because I don't think Arkansas would pay you. Is Arkansas going to pay you much more than UCF?
No. No.
They'll pay you more, but.
I mean, you got the Waltons, so maybe. But
yeah.
Probably not Gus Malzahn. You know, I mean, if they had to go money whip like a big name to come in there or whatever, Malzahn may be a big enough name. That's probably
he's a pretty big name.
Yeah, but if I was Traylor, I wouldn't. If you want to go make the money and take a shot at it, great. But if you're looking at trying to continue a lineage of winning and all that stuff, that's a pretty tough gig there.
I think both Arkansas and Mississippi State need to hire off the wall.
Well, that's when Mississippi State's been successful, right? They had
Leach.
Obviously Leach and then Mullen, who's weird as hell, but.
But also weird offense.
Yep.
Weird systems, right? Mm-hmm. Different types of players.
You can go get the guys that other people don't quote unquote want and win with them.
How badly did Will Arnett read the room? The fired head coach from Mississippi State. He's the DC of Mississippi State. What was he thinking? Why do DCs always shoot themselves?
Reverted back to what was comfortable to him.
Instead of
what worked.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, if you were going to hire a DC or a defensive guy to be your head coach, you have to ask one question. Am I hiring Bob Stoops type DC? Yep. Mm-hmm. Or am I hiring everyone else? Because
yep.
If it's Bob Stoops goes, I'm confident in my defense. Let's get a badass offense that throws the ball around because my D will hold up.
Yep.
By the way, that's why I have to coach against.
We talked about that with Saban, and it's like the hurry up offense is going to ruin college football. And the next year he's like, well, guess I'm ruining college football with everybody else because this sucks.
Well, and Saban was also like, at first he was like, it's a safety issue.
Yeah.
It's like, oh my God, Nick, you're not prepared.
1.5 years in, he's like, where's Lane Kiffin?
Yeah.
Bring him in.
We're going to go hurry up or no huddle, right, Lane?
Yeah. No, this, never mind. I take that back. I want to win
Lane,
games.
You're fired. You're not going fast enough.
Yeah, 100%.
So. Yeah, it's awesome. But
I don't know where they go. I'm not wrong. I think he knows that AD pretty well or worked for him maybe back in the day there. I can't remember, but I'm sure that's. He's on their short list. I still don't know if I was him, if that would be. I think a school in Houston's probably going to be open, and one up 35 might be open that would be a little bit more enticing.
I'm blanking. What's the one up 35?
It's in between Austin and Dallas.
Oh, Hillsborough.
Yes.
Okay.
But you're too far north. It's Mary Hardin.
Itasca.
I don't even know where Mary Harden Baylor is. I think it's in Waco. Is it in Waco?
Is it in Belton?
Maybe it's in Belton. I think you're right. I think it is Belton. I don't know. They won like a couple championships a couple years ago. I remember seeing the thing sign on the side of the road. Sorry to any Mary Harden Baylor guys that are listening. My fault.
They're going to be pissed off, man. There's a lot of them.
But I don't know that he's going to make it through the year there.
No, that's probably a money issue. I don't know. I don't know who's willing to,
We don't know what the money is.
We don't know what the money is because it's private. So I know he's extended through 2029. So I'm going to assume it's not a small amount of money.
Yeah. He's making. Yeah. But many performances like the one last week might be enough, but.
Yeah. BYU could be coming open.
I think it needs to, because I don't know that dude's the answer there. I don't know. I know basically from watching the Texas game and combining like a quarter of a game, a quarter of a game, and a quarter of a game. But yeah, I don't see much promise there.
Seeing him penalized for back-to-back timeouts was probably not good that it happened around midseason too, right? I think people now know that rule.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe some fresh blood in BYU. They got a pretty good coaching tree. I imagine you can find someone.
I mean, it's been successful. Where'd he come from? Is he an internal hire?
Yeah, he's a BYU guy all the way. BYU. Sitake. Yeah. All right. Well, we've comprehensively covered the landscape of college football hires. We've delved into the world of Agginess. We found out that Randy is swayed. He sawed the horns off. It's embarrassing.
No, I sat down before that.
Oh, you did? Okay. Man, that's tough. I wonder how many other UT baseball players have betrayed University of Texas.
I don't know, man. It's tough. Right.
Hey, how much do coaches at A&M have to participate
in, I don't know,
Aggie stuff?
I always kind of wondered that, but I never really paid attention because, I mean, they do it down the foul line in baseball games. Like
they do?
The whole team's out there. Yeah.
Oh, really?
They did. I hadn't been to a game in a while, but yeah. So I don't know if the whole coaching staff's out there like after the anthem doing it or what, but I would assume so. Right. I mean, you're employed there. Like,
I wish I knew who did this, but there was a time I was watching a UT baseball game on TV. We were playing A&M. It was at A&M and we beat them. Of course, it was awesome. It was around the time you were there, maybe a little after. And I wish I knew who had done it. I just didn't know our baseball team well enough to like have a flash of his face and know who it was. I couldn't see his number, but they were doing the Aggie wore him thing. And the UT players were lined up kind of watching it. And as the camera panned, one of the UT baseball players did the jerk off symbol. thing.
If you could pin it down to my ears, I'd have a good guess. But
who's your best guess? Who would have done that?
I'll keep that one in house. But yeah,
oh man, he'd be proud.
There's a guy that used to close baseball games from Bay City that I would put money on.
Oh, I think I know who you're talking about. I got it. I picked up what you're laying down. I wish I was better versed in baseball to know the guy on site.
Jay Brent didn't have much time for any of the silliness of anything.
Just seeing a guy doing the whack off symbol in the middle.
I don't know if that's a true thing or not, but if you could pin it down to 04 to 05, I guess he was gone after that. Then
there you go.
It would not surprise me then.
That's awesome.
If you would have thrown that one out there.
All right, man, very quickly, so we don't turn this into a complete marathon. Any thoughts, apprehensions about going to Ames and Iowa State? Texas is a 8-point favorite.
Yeah, I got a bunch of them.
Yeah, same.
One of them's out for the season with a torn ACL, unfortunately. Brutal, I feel terrible for him, man.
He was so awesome this year.
Brutal timing. Obviously from a Texas football standpoint, but just draft. From a personal standpoint, draft, everything. It's just, I mean, you're looking at just bad timing. You know, if he rehabs and comes back, which I think is probably the play. I mean, you just hope maybe he can squeeze it in a week earlier and get four good games on tape and prove he's healthy. But you know, hopefully get a postseason appearance. But that just, that hurts because, I don't know, Baxter would have to take a pretty significant step forward, or you're going to have to get a lot more out of the rest of that room. Or you could kind of use the intermediate short passing game to replace most of your running game, which would actually set up pretty well, except our quarterback has a sprained AC joint. So who knows? See how good the shot is, I guess.
I feel like our defense can dominate for three quarters before they
I feel like we're back to what was it last year or the year before, where we just like, hey, let's try and score as many points as we can early and then just hold on for dear life.
Yeah, with Hunter Deckers when they had the little furious comeback. We were up 24-7, right?
I mean, I haven't seen them play since they've kind of gone on their little resurgence here lately or whatever. And I mean, I think, you know, Campbell's a good coach and all that, but if we can play the way we did for 2.5 to almost three quarters, maybe sneak it a little bit further in the fourth quarter. you know, I mean, worse things have happened in Ames at night, but they show up and play. They should be able to take care of business and get out of there with a win. I'm not going to say it's going to be pretty or anything along those lines, but it'll be I'll be interested to see how Heacock attacks the Texas offense without Brooks.
I'll tell you one thing that does help us. They don't have a pass rush at all.
Yeah, I'm just not that familiar with them. I haven't dove in at all, but yeah, that helps.
I mean, their best defenses have always had a dude or two who could really bring it against the passer. They just don't have that guy.
What's been the secret behind their turnaround? I guess you've probably watched them enough to have some sort of feel on that. Quarterback play or their defense sort of figured out a way to get it done, or both?
Three things. The quarterback has improved every week, Rocco Becht.
Great name.
Yep, absolutely. Two, their offensive line has improved. Their offensive line coach has done a good job with these guys. And you can see their improvement from game one to game nine. Like lower pads, better coordination, better timing. I'm not saying they're running the ball like Michigan, but dramatically improved in terms. They actually have a little running game now, which they did not have. And then thirdly, their defense. You know, the Heacock defense can take a while for it to hit. They don't have the pass rusher, which does hamstring them a little, but they're turning everybody over. You know, that's what they're good at. And they play well. They play coordinated. But the lack of a pass rush, I think, against Worthy and Mitchell and Sanders.
That's the problem.
I think that becomes a lot more dangerous than not having a pass rush against BYU. Yeah. Who cares, right? So that's going to be the battle. And then, you know, if we got to go in there and throw the ball 45 times to win, that's what we need to do.
Yep.
Go do it.
No, I agree. Yeah, they're in a constant tension there between how do we get pressure and how do we cover if they can't get there with four. So
yeah, and it is a shame to not have Jonathan Brooks, because they will give up the run when they're scared of your passing threats. And I think Brooks would have had 150 on those guys. I really do. And it's, I mean, so beyond the selfish fan stuff, I just also wish Brooks had that opportunity, right?
Let me get your take on this. Somebody mentioned this. I can't remember who it is, but what's your take on Baxter needing to be more in the pistol than offset?
Maybe, but you know, at the bottom line, at contact, he goes down.
I agree.
And
I just don't think he sees. I just don't think that he sees the game very well right now, and maybe that has something to do with it. But no, you're not wrong. He does not at this point. He hasn't proven that that he can fight through first contact.
I like the pistol, but one of the drawbacks of the pistol is pass pro.
The name? Oh, okay.
The name, yeah. it's pass pro, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if there is a game where you're going to come with some middle blitz and some different stuff, it's going to be against Texas at home. And with a freshman running back in the pistol trying to run and pick up stuff and not having the natural offset advantage that you have. So I honestly, Randy, I think that's why Baxter plays. I think he's a good pass blocker.
And he has been pretty solid. I mean,
yeah.
The times that you notice it, it's been a productive block. Yeah.
And so I can't
remember any like egregious, oh my God, he whiffed that guy and it got some like killed plays either. Which is pretty impressive for a freshman, honestly.
Very impressive. And so I think that's why he plays. I'll be honest. Yeah. I think that's why he's second team. It's not because of his efficacy running the ball. I think Jaden Blue right now is a better ball carrier.
Yeah, you're probably right. I think
Keelan Robinson might be too. So
what do we got on him?
I don't know why. I don't know why he's not playing. He obviously is all over every special team.
But... Well, he didn't play at all last week.
Oh, he didn't?
Mm-mm.
I didn't even notice.
Traveled, but did not play.
He must be banged up or something.
I'm sure he is. I didn't know if it was. I mean, he traveled, so couldn't be that bad, right? And I don't think they would have used a roster or a travel spot for somebody that they were 100% convinced weren't going to play. So hopefully it's not too bad. Or hopefully maybe it was some other issue and he's healthy and maybe it was a little, I don't know.
It could be a disciplinary thing. Like he went to A&M and swayed and then they suspended him.
This was after college, by the way. I don't know. But I just noticed he wasn't on the special teams as the gunner or anything, and he didn't return the kicks.
Oh yeah, good catch. I didn't even notice.
I didn't notice the kick return thing because obviously nobody returns kicks until we were trying to return one from our one.
It got to the 14.
At the worst possible time. But if you stick a freshman back there, that's what's gonna happen.
So. Freshman's gonna bring it back, man.
Yeah, he's They're like, I haven't got to touch the ball all game.
Freshman's like, I'm gonna score, baby. I'm gonna be the hero. 11-yard line. I got hit. Yeah,
but
at least.
I was curious if you had anything on there, but hopefully he's just nicked up a little bit and precautionary. Because I think if you can get him 7 touches, probably would be a good thing.
What if we open up for a series with Arch just to throw him off?
Just throw it out there.
Yeah, just get it out there. Just get it on tape.
Why not?
Run a little option with him.
What if we come out at Quinn at left split end?
Oh,
Malik
yes.
At right flanker and yes. Arch.
Keep talking. I like this.
I'm trying to think of who I could even – and Whittington at running back, who somebody mentioned the other day. They need to play Whittington at safety and save the last 3 games of his career.
What if you come out with that and everyone's like, trick play, quarterback, and they're pointing, and we just run a dive?
And you shift back into a wishbone and hand it off to Jaden Blue right at the middle. That would be pretty funny, actually.
Second Nate.
Yeah, second and eight, and everybody went ballistic on the other sideline, and it's like I think I've said this before, but when I started later in my career, when I was old enough to kind of not care, not care, but just sort of have my own personality out there. My last warm up pitch before throwing down the second base, I'd always signal split if there was a left handed leadoff hitter, and this day and age, they'd have the scouting report. But back then, minor leagues, I don't think the scout reports were too good. And I'd turn the sinker over as hard as I could and make sure that it sank and try to throw it low. And you'd watch everybody in the deck go, hey, split. He's like, he's got a split. I'm like, I don't have a split.
That's awesome.
That would be the equivalent of this. It'd be like, they played 3 quarterbacks on the same play. What are we going to do if they do that again? I'm like, I don't know. And we don't know what we're going to do either, but that's the only play we got.
You make Iowa State burn a timeout.
Yeah.
Tense huddle.
Hey, there are people that do that. Like, that's in the game plan. Like, I guarantee you there's college OCs that have that in there.
Oh, yeah. Or you'll be playing a scrub, right, the week before a big rival.
You just show something crazy.
Run a bunch of bullshit trick plays just to make them spend time on it in practice.
Absolutely.
Hey, Michigan, Maryland this weekend, we're going to see some trick plays for Ohio State, I'm sure, that they're going to make Ohio State prep for. So, hey, finally, the Jim Harbaugh suspension. We haven't really talked about it much.
No, we haven't. Yeah.
I did send you a good Harbaugh tweet today. Did you enjoy that?
That's pretty good. The only thing that would have made it better is if instead of an apple, he said he was going to go eat nails.
Yes. So Harbaugh was doing a press conference because he's allowed to do everything but go to the games and stand on the sideline. He
allegedly.
The writer wrote, Randy thinks Harbaugh has a mustache and he's on the sideline.
That dude's definitely on the sideline somewhere.
You think he's like laying in an equipment manager locker?
He's either that or he's in an earbud from the locker room.
You think he's laying in an equipment locker like Bela Lugosi, Nosferatu, sitting?
Okay. I refuse to believe that dude's sitting at home.
Here's the quote from Harbaugh today from the media guy. Harbaugh sounds raspy, but insists he's not sick. I'm the iron wall that viruses bash against and shatter, he says. Says he'll do some more push-ups and eat an apple. How could anyone criticize this great man, Randy?
I need Jim Harbaugh versus Lane Kiffin with like in a bowl game with like a month lead up.
Have you seen the Jim Harbaugh clips of him going to the Judge Judy show?
No.
This is real. So Jim Harbaugh back in 2013, I think, went to a taping of Judge Judy, and while they're arguing the case and Judge Judy's mocking people, you could see Harbaugh in the audience laughing up a storm, just glowing, like so happy. And they asked him about it, and he said, Judge Judy is one of the last great truth tellers. I love Harbaugh.
That makes a lot of sense.
We're going to drive him out of college football, dude.
Makes a lot of sense. No, they are. That's why we can't have nice things. The NCAA will ruin everything.
Hey, man, you could say he stole signals. You could also say that you left your signals unattended. And he helped himself.
Not his fault.
I mean, if you leave a Powerade out at your house and it's just sitting on the counter, I might drink it.
Come up with something that takes longer than 6 weeks and multiple hours a night.
But my point
is somebody's basement to decipher.
We're going to lose this great man, Randy. He's going to go to the pros, the bullshit NFL, and it's soulless. We lost Leach. We're losing Harbaugh. We're going to lose all the characters, man.
Yep. No, it's going to be as generic as Kirby Smart walking out there and being like, nobody respects us.
Yeah, nobody has any.
Nobody. They just keep doubting us.
Everyone underestimates Georgia. Two-time national champion. Yeah. When will you people respect us?
We got to tell our kids all the time. They don't respect us.
So. Coaches live in such fantasy worlds. It's awesome. Yeah. But if you can get enough of your kids to live in the fantasy world with you, you can do anything.
Seems to be working pretty well for them.
All right, man. For Randy Boone, I am Paul Wadlington saying, hook 'em, y'all.
Hook 'em.
Interest rates are up and the market is tumultuous. And now more than ever, you need the best darn possible mortgage broker working on your behalf. That's Gabe Winslow, and you can reach him at 832-557-1095, or you can go to mortgagesbygabe.com. What makes Gabe so unique? Well, he's incredibly bright. He's a UT grad. He's got a law degree. He's been in the mortgage industry for over 20 years, and he is a true mortgage broker. What does that mean? It means he can shop for the best deal at over 80 different lenders and find you the terms that best suit you. Most mortgage guys you talk to won't reveal that they have exactly one size fits all for you and exactly one conduit to get your loan. If you are in these hyper-competitive markets and you're in these markets that are frankly gotten a lot less friendly to the consumer, you need the best possible person working on your behalf. That's Gabe Winslow. He has our full endorsement. You can reach him at 832-557-1095.
Do you need a realtor in Central Texas? Of course you do. We all need a realtor in Central Texas, even those of us who live in Dallas or Houston or San Francisco or Denver, Colorado. You need to go to Central Texas anyway. And the reason is Laura Baker is a fantastic realtor. She's great at what she does. She's a member of the elite Andy Allen team for Keller Williams. You can reach her at 512-784-0505. Talk with Laura if you're thinking about putting your house on the market. This is a great time to get market comps. If you're looking to buy in the market, you need all the help you can get. Call Laura and it's 512-784-0505. Are you worried that recent events have derailed your retirement plans? It certainly made us reassess all aspects of ours, and that's why we're proud to offer our listeners a chance to work with David McClellan, a fiduciary financial advisor from Forum Financial. David's practice specializes in financial life coaching and retirement planning. And right now, he's offering free consultations for our listeners if you mention the podcast. As part of this consultation, David can help you understand your financial freedom number and what that means to you in assessing your future financial plans. If you want to build wealth, if you want to make optimal decisions within your financial life, David is someone you need to talk to. You can reach him at 312-933-8823. Once again, that's David McClellan at 312-933-8823. He's located in Austin, Texas, but he's got a nationwide clientele. Do yourself a favor and get some great financial advice for free and see if you might want to work with Mr. McClellan. I think you'll be happy with your phone call.